The Athletic.
The only way to score is, of course, to play with a handbrake off.
Hello, I'm Ian Stone. This is Handbrake Off, the Arsenal podcast, brought to you by The Athletic. Yesterday, the Arsenal lost 2-0 at home to Aston Villa, ending the day 2 points behind Manchester City at the top of the table. To reflect on the game and look ahead to Bayern Munich on Wednesday, I'm joined by James McNicholas and Art de Roche. Morning.
Good morning,
Ian. Good morning.
Morning. Yeah, it's afternoon, actually, isn't it? It is. I heard the hesitation there, Art. I thought, he's right.
I looked down at the time on the laptop and I was like, but I'll go along with it anyway.
It's not morning and it's not good. But apart from that, it was all right.
Aside from that, it was spot on, wasn't it, really? You're right. Bad afternoon is what I should have said. Anyway, you guys, I saw both of you. I was walking out, right? It was horrible, to be honest with you. I was walking out at the end of the game and I turned round and I see Emi Martinez doing the punchy fisty thing with the Villa fans. And I just thought, that is one of the worst things I have ever seen in my life. And then I turned round and I saw both your faces with the sort of 1,000-yard stare in the press box as I left, and I thought, yeah, you're feeling it too. We all need a bit of a pickup, right? We all do. So we're wondering, how does Mikel Arteta pick the boys up after that? I don't really want motivational speeches here, any of that stuff. Art, what you got? Something a bit left field for us?
Honestly, I was trying to think, and my head is still at just pure disappointment. So I don't even know. I wouldn't even say anything. I'll just.
Well, that's not going to help, is it?
No,
to pick the boys up and just sit there miserable.
Well, I don't know. Like, they've got to do the work themselves. Like,
is that what it is?
Yeah, I think it's more. I'd go more around that route.
Oh my God! Hey, you know what would work, actually? If you just sat there with that face I saw you at, that you had yesterday, and they would look at you and go, "Well, at least we're not him. At least we don't look as miserable as that." All right. Well, that's an answer of sorts. James, have you got anything? Or
we should tell the listener, Art's actually still in his seat in the press box. You can't tell, but he's been sat catatonic for the best part of 12 hours now.
Yeah.
I'd send them to Dubai, Ian. 24 hours in Dubai.
It's true. Via Dubai to Munich. You're right. They're in the plane anyway. So
fans are going some stranger routes than that to get to this quarterfinal tie, I can tell you. So yeah, listen, it helped so much last time. It's the only remedy, unless you've got something better.
No, I think meat off a hot knife from some bloke, some weird bloke who dribbles salt down his elbow. I think that seemed to work last time. I was wondering about a comedy night, actually. I was thinking, okay, do you think maybe, I mean, obviously it's a disparate bunch. You've got, you know, Germans and you've got Brazilians, and it's quite hard to tailor comedy to all those people, but maybe something, I don't know, a bit of mime or something, that works for everyone, doesn't it? Something physical.
Yeah.
I'm not saying me, by the way. I'm absolutely not saying me. But maybe that would help. Paintballing, or is that too energetic? They looked a bit knackered at the end. They want something a bit calming.
I remember Emery took this whole squad paintballing when he was in charge. So I don't know if they'd get PTSD or flashbacks from that.
Well, most of them are gone, aren't they, to be fair? Also, if he did it before the final in Baku, I would definitely not recommend it. Anyway, they need some pick-me-up, right? Arsenal 0, Aston Villa 2. Very disappointing, particularly after Liverpool lost at home to Palace, and I was walking to the ground and past all these pubs, all these Arsenal fans watching, and the roar that went up when the final whistle went, and then to see what we saw. Before we get into the game itself, James, did it get to them, the pressure? Because I thought in the first half, I mean, I saw on the whistle, you said even Stevens first half, and I've heard a few people say that. I thought we were much the better team. I mean, obviously they hit the post and they were dangerous, but we got in behind more than once. Mikel Arteta said we should have been 3-4-5 up. I thought, no, mate, come on. But we probably should have been 1 or 2. So I thought they didn't look to me like a team under massive pressure.
No, I think you're right, actually. And I think that was probably a bit unfair of me to say it was even Stevens' first half. I think Arsenal did have the better of it. Maybe my opinion was coloured by that chance for Ollie Watkins right before half-time, you know, where they very nearly went in front. But I think the story of the first half for Arsenal was missed opportunities, you know.
Particularly Trossard.
Yeah, that Trossard one, which I think that came about 60 seconds after the Watkins one. So it could have been a really, really interesting minute in the game. But there were other moments. Havertz got in behind. Jesus had a header at the back post. I think we definitely had the better of it, but we weren't able to get the lead. And I think the longer it went without us doing that, the more Aston Villa's confidence grew, and they grew into the game. And I thought in the second half, you know, they were comfortably better than us.
Yeah, they were. Our first league loss in 2024. I mean, it's not like we're on a terrible run. We've won 10 and drawn one of the last 12. But it feels so damaging, doesn't it? And does this sort of bring home to you how ridiculous it is at the moment with Manchester City that you have to be essentially perfect to win the title?
Yeah, myself and James, after I'd kind of recovered and stopped staring into the distance, we were chatting, and I think what makes it even more frustrating is it is Manchester City. You have that 2-point advantage. Now, I think if it was slightly different and Liverpool had that advantage, the feeling would be totally different. But with the experience Manchester City have, I think it just makes it feel so much more like a wasted opportunity, especially as you mentioned, after the Liverpool result and how the first half went especially. So, yeah, it was a real, real gut punch.
Yeah, we'll talk about the Arsenal, but one has to say, James, Villa were excellent yesterday. I mean, they defended very well in the first half. We still got in behind them, as I said, but they, you know, they've got a top-class goalkeeper, and they've got some very, very good players, and they were always dangerous, and they were leaving three or four up. And the second half, Unai Emery essentially outcoached Mikel Arteta a little bit, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it was interesting listening to Emery after the game. He was kind of asked, what did you change at half-time? What did you do differently? And in fairness to him, he sort of said, well, not very much. He just felt like his players grew into it, as I mentioned before, and really stuck to the plan that they went into the match with. Rode their luck a little bit in the first half. Martinez made a couple of good saves. But then when they started playing their football in the second half, we didn't seem to have an answer to it. I thought, you know, their wide players were good, holding the ball up, bringing others into play. Watkins always a threat in behind. And this was a Villa side who were without Douglas Luiz, who's been one of their players of the season. Kamara as well has been really important for them in midfield.
That's their midfield. Yeah. That's their midfield. I based a lot of my hope on the fact that they were missing their two first-choice midfield players.
Yeah, then. I don't think their fans were hugely optimistic going into this one, but it was frustrating from an Arsenal perspective that we couldn't seem to get to grips with them, and also that the changes that Mikel Arteta made didn't seem to stem the tide at all, really, or make much discernible difference.
Well, let's talk about those changes then. First of all, the changes he made to the lineup. James, I will ask you this first, just because you brought it up as well. And you said again, I heard you say about you weren't that keen on the selection. And I'm assuming you're talking about Gabriel Jesus up front and Kai Havertz coming back into midfield. Do you think those changes were made, particularly Gabriel Jesus and maybe Zinny coming in as well, with Wednesday in mind? Because you certainly can't see Jesus starting on Wednesday. I might be wrong about that, of course, but I think, and maybe giving Jorginho a rest as well, because, you know, you have to use the squad.
Yeah, I think the Jorginho factor might be the biggest one there. You know, I think he probably needed a rest, and, you know, that meant pulling Rice a bit deeper.
He didn't fancy Partey then. Partey's looked a bit rusty, because if Thomas is fit and going properly, he's coming in, isn't he, for Jorginho?
I think so. But I think that, you know, that Thomas Partey subject is something that it's happened to Arsenal more broadly. When we're getting these players back from injury, but do we have them back at anything like, you know, their potential? Even someone like Tomiyasu, he's played a handful of minutes. Fabio Vieira, even less. So although these players are technically available for selection, I'm not sure they're quite the players as we know them. I've made no secret the fact I think structurally the team is better with Havertz up top. And I think that's not just down to what Kai does when he's leading the line. I think we look better with a second sort of progressive passing midfield player in there, along with Declan Rice and Martin Odegaard. But, you know, Mikel Arteta's, he's not... Maybe he feels he's not got the options right now. You know, has he got another midfield player who can do what Jorginho does? Perhaps not. Has he got a number nine who can do quite what Kai Havertz does? Perhaps not. All that said, I will still come back to the fact that if Arsenal score in that first half, we're probably not talking about it today. So it's one of those where I don't want to allow hindsight to, you know, determine my opinion too much, because I think Arsenal picked an 11 that was good enough to win the game. Just didn't go that way.
Yeah, I mean, I said to Jay, our producer, we sit next to each other, you know, well, it's different to what we're expecting, but, you know, it's Mikel Arteta and he seems to know what he's doing, so we'll just let him get on with it. And to a certain extent, this is all, well, not to a certain extent, this is entirely hindsight now, but we've looked so good with Kai Havertz up front and Jorginho in midfield, and it seemed such a shame not to use them in those positions, but we got Munich away in a couple of days.
Yeah, if I'm being totally honest, I wasn't actually surprised by those changes. I was expecting Jesus to come in and possibly Havertz to drop back to the eight, because I felt it was almost like a warm-up for the second leg, where Jesus came on and showed the problems he could give Bayern's centre-backs, because they're not the most mobile. And when he's in there, he can cause chaos. But
he didn't yesterday, though, did he? He didn't really offer enough as a number nine.
No, so I would say he didn't, I guess, repay Mikel Arteta with that start. But just from, I guess, my personal opinion, I wasn't surprised to see both him and Kai Havertz starting. The one that did surprise me was at left back, but I'm sure we'll get onto that in a little bit.
Not in a little bit. We'll get onto it now, because that is really the main talking point. And I've defended Alexander Zinchenko quite a lot this season, because there's no doubt that he progresses the ball. And when he plays, when he steps into the middle, we seem to play a bit further up the pitch. That being said, there were two things I want to ask. I'll ask you about this. Somebody made a comment, I can't remember who it was, on social media about how when Zinchenko steps into midfield, it sort of gets in the same places that Declan Rice gets into, and there's a bit of a clash positionally. What do you think about that?
I think there were times yesterday where you could see Arsenal had to kind of be really patient with what they were doing on the ball, because they were still trying to figure out who was moving where. And it gave Aston Villa some encouragement to press them a bit higher. But then also, what, and I know we've spoken about this before, what doesn't help is when Zinchenko gets the ball and then just kind of stalls on it for about 10, 15, 20 seconds. So I think the big key is, if he's on the ball, he's just got to move the ball quickly like he was doing last season, and hasn't really been the case for most of the time this season, which is the biggest frustration, I think, because he can do it. He showed against Bayern when he came on that he can move the ball quickly. But yeah, yesterday, or Sunday, I should say, it just didn't seem to be happening. And I was going to go into the defensive stuff, but I'm sure that's your next question. So I'll let you go.
It is the next question. James, I mean, as a defender, he just gives me the heebie-jeebies, to be honest with you. I love watching him play. I genuinely do. I think he's an excellent, excellent player. But in the first half, there were a couple of moments when he lost the ball in difficult positions. Even the one where Gabriel hit it against his back, that all stemmed from the fact that he jumped and basically headed it over our defence, and Gabriel had to track back. And then he ran round, and then Gabriel hit it against his back. And then Ollie Watkins hit the post. In the second half, he lost the ball trying to, I don't know what, beat Tielemans on the edge of his own penalty area.
Yeah, well, he's kind of a defender who's not really a defender, isn't he? I mean, I think in spirit, he's a playmaker. He's number 10. He's a player who comes with a certain degree of risk attached to him, isn't he? You know, he takes chances on the ball, and that can be a real positive. But at the moment, I think he's not in the best of form, and it feels like the opposition are wise, essentially, to sort of the trick of him inverting into midfield. So it feels like the balance is shifting. It feels like, you know, he's as unhelpful as helpful now, really. And, you know, the fans yesterday, you could feel their anxiety around him. And I think that was transmitting to the pitch and the players a little bit too.
Yeah.
So it's a really tricky one. Mikel Arteta has shown incredible faith in Zinchenko. And I remember at times, you know, even a few months ago, where Arsenal might win, but he'd make a mistake that would lead to an opposition goal. And he would almost laugh it off. You know, he would say, well, that's Alex. You know, we know that about Alex, but we love what he brings to the team. I don't see him laughing about it quite so much anymore. I get the sense that his own feeling, his own conviction about it is evolving. And I think if you look at the evolution of the team more broadly, it seems to me that this season has all been about reducing risk, yeah, reducing jeopardy, control, not giving the opposition anything. And I feel like Zinchenko at this point in time feels like a bit of a relic of last season in that respect. And how crazy is that?
It's a bit crazy. It is. I mean, Timber would be in the team if he was fit, right? Timber would be first choice. There's no doubt about that. And this, do you concur, Art? You were nodding your head there, that to a certain extent, the team has outgrown him a little bit.
Yeah, and I think the biggest part James touched on it was Mikel Arteta's spoken, I think it was a couple months ago, about the team needing to evolve. And we've seen that in other positions, say at goalkeeper, for instance. Ramsdale was probably the first evolution from Bernd Leno. And then even he got a next evolution. If we're talking like we are, I mean, it sounds like Pokemon, really.
Does it? I have no idea what you're saying at this point. You could be speaking in a different language.
Who's our left-back Charizard? That's what I need
exactly
to know.
So,
I'm laughing. I don't know why I'm laughing. Anyway, go on.
But yeah, it feels like Timber is definitely the next evolution up from Zinchenko at left-back, because not only can he come into midfield, he's also very strong defensively in one-on-ones.
Yeah, it's safer. It's safer, isn't it?
And even with that, I think in the glimpses we saw of him, he's also very good at ghosting forward into the final third, which is a really interesting and exciting prospect for whenever he's back. So yeah, I think Zinchenko throughout this season has been quite lucky in some senses to actually start games, because his physical traits haven't really been what have suited games best, but he's been the player who's been available.
I just wanted to ask, Art, what do you think is going on with Takehiro Tomiyasu? Because to me, he seems like the logical choice at left back. You know, he's a great all-round player, able on the ball, but a very good defender in one-to-one. And I've been really surprised to not see him in the starting 11 over the last few weeks.
Yeah, that's surprised me as well. I don't know what is going on and why he's not starting games.
Well, it's likely to be fitness, isn't it?
I'd assume so. But even yesterday, you would have felt with Moussa Diaby on that right side, he would be the one most suited to that challenge. And he didn't come on until probably 70 minutes. I can't remember exactly when.
He came on for Ben White, didn't he? Who was getting a bit of a torrid time from Zaniolo, by the way. I mean, that's one of the hardest games he's had over the last few months.
Yeah, so with Tommy, I would have started him, especially with Bayern in mind. Now I even more so think that he should be starting in the second leg. But of course, I mean, we say that, but we're not the ones picking the team.
Well, yeah, they obviously Mikel sees them every day in training, and he knows what's what. One more thing, just I understand what you were saying about Zinchenko and how slow he was to distribute and the lack of options. Villa's high line, I mean, they caught us offside 5 times. It isn't easy to play against them. I mean, it just isn't. They are a very, very good team. They're well coached and they push up very high. And I just don't think there were that many options for him, which is why I think he kept stopping and turning back and coming around again. But it was a bit frustrating. Before we move on from the game, I mean, last season, a bad result would trigger a string of bad results. This team seems to have learnt from that. We had a couple of bad results around Christmas time, 3 in a row, in fact. And then we went off to Dubai, as we all know, and it all came together after that. It's all about the response. James, Declan Rice talked about it yesterday. Mikel Arteta talked about it yesterday. To a certain extent, I mean, obviously they're tired after what happened. They had a bit of a runaround in the second half against Villa. Is this the perfect game, or would you rather have Luton at home?
Yeah. I mean, I could make an argument for why it's the perfect game, but in my heart of hearts, I'd probably rather have Luton at home. I mean, it just feels bigger, even bigger than it did before.
It's massive, you know? Anyway, though, isn't it? I mean, it was always going to be massive. It's Bayern Munich in the quarterfinal of the Champions League.
But, you know, it's quite easy to see how, if Arsenal do go out in Germany, you know, the narratives write themselves about the season falling apart in the space of a week, essentially. I think that would be a bit unfair because there's still a lot to play for in the Premier
League. 2 points behind, and we got a better goal difference than them.
Yeah, just about. They'd hammered Luton the other day, didn't they? Man City had Luton at home on Saturday.
Yeah, well, quite, and that was handy for them. We've still got 5 better goal difference than them. That's the truth of it. I'm looking at the table. They draw a game and we win a game and we go back on top. I mean, everyone's looking at them and going, oh, how are they going to lose a game? But I don't know. I think people get a bit angry. And there was quite a lot of anger there yesterday. And I thought it felt a bit misplaced a little bit. There was a guy behind us that when the fourth official put up the board for 2 minutes, only 2 minutes of added time in the first half, I genuinely thought he was going to give himself an aneurysm. I mean, the bloke went off on one. He was screaming and then he stopped for a second and then he went again. I thought, mate, you know, and we were 0-0 at the time. I think by the end he'd gone. But I don't know. I just think people have to have a little bit of perspective. James, do you not think?
I do agree with that. I think, obviously, what happened with Liverpool really amped people up for this one, didn't it?
Yeah, but
they
lost to Palace, by the way. If we'd have lost to Palace, it would have been worse, wouldn't it? Because Palace are not a particularly good team. Villa are a good side.
They are a good side. And I do think, you know, maybe some supporters were a bit guilty of overlooking that. I mean, they beat Manchester City earlier this season. They beat us at Villa Park. They're going to be in the Champions League next year. They're a very good team, a very well-coached team as well, to give Unai Emery his dues. But I also think that maybe collectively, when we spoke about the run-in, we all spoke about those big away games. You know, City was one. We spoke about Old Trafford, having to go to Spurs, North London Derby. And I count myself in this, but I sort of looked at the home games and thought, well, yeah, we'll win those ones. Don't worry about those. So I think to have lost one, it just means that the margin for error now is so fine. And I know what you're saying. Of course, Man City can slip up, but I can't blame any Arsenal fan who sort of fears that they might go on and win every game because they're perfectly capable of it. We've seen them do it before.
Yeah, quite. All right. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. What we'll do is we'll take a break and then we'll talk about another massive game coming up on Wednesday night. Ian Stone here with Art DeRoche and James McNicholas on Handbrake Off.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
They get a handbrake off and you can see that they are more free to play.
This is Handbrake Off, the Arsenal podcast, brought to you by The Athletic. Bayern Munich away on Wednesday before we talk about that, but Germany related. Congratulations to the Bundesliga champion, Granit Xhaka, I think are in order. I mean, it was a miserable day for the Arsenal yesterday, but it was good to see Granit Xhaka celebrate. And I know there might be people who go, why are you talking about that? What difference does that make to us? But Granit, you know, he had his ups and downs, but obviously he's turned up in this Leverkusen team. They're unbeaten for the entire season. I mean, if they win the treble and they go unbeaten, no one has ever done that. No one. So I think we can thank heavens that Xavi Alonso is not going to Liverpool. As far as we know, that is a relief because he seems like quite a good manager. But a word for Granit, Art.
Yeah, I think it's just nice to see that it's gone so well for him so quickly without any drama that he had at Arsenal. No. I think it's been as seamless a move anyone could have hoped for. And it's also quite nice that, or fitting that he scored in the game that won them the league. So
30-yarder.
Yep. So congratulations to Granit. I think everyone from an Arsenal perspective, it's just quite nice that people got to understand him as a person before he left. So there isn't that kind of vitriol still towards him. And yeah, congratulations.
There's a nice piece on The Athletic today about Leverkusen's title triumph. One of the things that's interesting about Xhaka is obviously he was kind of reinvented last season playing as a more attack-minded midfield player, playing as number eight. And with Leverkusen, he's, you know, back at the base of the midfield. He's playing in a deeper role again, admittedly in a pair. But, you know, that was the role I think that a lot of people felt in England he couldn't really succeed in. So it's been interesting to see him go and do that in Germany and do an amazing job. And yeah, I'm really pleased for him on a personal level because he was a top guy and like very, very good servant to the club, I think, down the years. So yeah, delighted for him. And there might be more to come the way that team are going. They've got other prizes to be won.
Well, quite. Obviously, Leverkusen winning the title meant that Bayern Munich didn't, which means that the game on Wednesday for them is shit or bust, essentially, isn't it? I mean, they if they don't win that, they're not going to win any trophies, which obviously, with Harry Kane playing for them, would be, you know, amusing on a number of levels. I mean, it's a massive... do you know what? I don't even want to say it's a massive game because everyone says it and it's such a cliche, but it is, isn't it? Martin Ødegaard came off at the end of yesterday. Mikel Arteta said in the press conference, I believe he said he had an issue. James, I mean... We need him, don't we? We so need him fit.
Yeah, I said he was feeling something and he could not continue, but he did not choose to elaborate beyond that.
No.
I think if he's anything like fit, he'll be on that pitch. I mean, he's so important to us right now. I just think he's almost unique within the squad in terms of what he offers. And actually, this on another day might have been a podcast where we were lauding his performance because I thought in the first half in particular, he was sensational.
Yeah.
Some of his touches and interplay, but we didn't have the finishing touch to kind of, you know, convert that into goals. He's so important and yeah, desperately hope he'll be out there. I think he will be. I mean,
it would take a lot
for him to miss it. Yeah. And I actually think, you know, obviously he wants to win every game, but whenever I see him play in the Champions League, it's almost like he has an extra bit of zip. I think, you know, obviously he's, you know, came from Europe, you know, signed from Real Madrid. I think this competition is the big one for him and I think he'll be there.
Yeah, and it was instructive as well, wasn't it? When he went off, essentially, we didn't know what we were doing at that point. I mean, he is really the centre of the whole thing. And that's not to in any way ever go at Emile Smith Rowe, but it's just Martin Ødegaard. I think James is right. Of all the players we've got, and there are a number who are crucial to the whole project, he's the centre of it, isn't he, really? The way he plays, leads the press. He's the conductor of the orchestra, isn't he, really?
Definitely. I think... As you mentioned, it's not to have a go at anyone else, but you noticed his absence when he went off. And one of the big reasons for that was because of the defensive work he does. There was that moment in the first half where some really like ridiculously good touches in the box to free Saka, and then Villa get the ball, try to clear it, and he's blocked the clearance and won a corner. And it's moments like that, I think, where you see just how complete a midfielder he is for Arsenal. And there was, yeah, moments when he made Tielemans do the splits, the scooped pass for Havertz. If I was in the stands, I would have been screaming. But I behaved myself in the press box.
Yeah.
And yeah, in the Champions
League. You're still in there, aren't you?
Still in there.
That's fair enough, yeah.
Mentally still there. But yeah, as James mentioned, I think especially in that Porto second leg, if he performs anything like that in Germany, I think Arsenal should have a very good day.
Yeah, let's have some reasons for optimism. I mean, aside from them having a few players missing, Kingsley Coman, Serge Gnabry out due to injury, Alphonso Davies is suspended. James, that's a lot of pace that they've lost there, isn't it? I mean, these are three lightning-fast players. Leroy Sané will obviously be there, and which is what I'd like to see Tommy playing. I mean, is there a case almost for man-marking Sané? He gave us so many problems in that first league.
Well, fortunately, our left-back situation's entirely comfortable and resolved, and we've got no worries in that position at
all.
Yeah, honestly, he's one of those players, without wishing to dodge the question, I don't know how you stop him because he can do a bit of everything. You know, he's quick, he can run in behind, he's got the close control to receive the ball on the turn, get tight to him, he can blow past you.
He's already been through two left backs, hasn't he, in the first leg?
Exactly,
I mean, you know,
mate. Yeah, I think.
Well, one left.
Listen, I think it's time we give Tomiyasu a go. I do think Tomiyasu is the best one-on-one defender we have, probably, in the fullback positions. I think he's the logical choice. I just hope he's fit enough. because that's what's giving me that nagging doubt. I think if he was properly fit, he would have started before now. So I just hope he's got 90 minutes in him. Because this could be, let's not forget, a 120-minute game.
Yeah, quite. Without away goals, penalties are a big possibility, aren't they, really? Oh, any other reasons for optimism? And we really, I mean, that first 20 minutes against Bayern last week, you know, we took it to them. We really took it to them. If Ben White has some, you know, finishing pedigree, we're 2-0 up and we're in a good position there. I mean, listen, they were obviously dangerous. We made a couple of mistakes and we got caught and they will put us under pressure, but they've got to fear us as well.
Yeah, I think the thing in my mind is Bayern didn't have to work for either of their goals. They were gifts, really. If you go into that second leg and perform quite similarly to that first 20 minutes, as you mentioned, should bear similar results. If there's better finishing, obviously better results. So I think I'm quite optimistic still, just because it felt like the game was in Arsenal's hands. They were the ones that let it go. If you do the same in the Allianz and make sure you get control of the game early, you can kind of steer the direction of it. So yeah, Ødegaard fit, I think Arsenal will be able to do that. And also, as I mentioned earlier, their centre-backs are not the most agile. So if Jesus does start, I wouldn't be surprised if he causes them issues even after his performance yesterday.
Do you think he will start though?
I don't know. To be fair, I wouldn't be, I guess, opposed to have a starting back up front and Jesus / Trossard being used in a similar way off the bench, especially when you consider this could go to extra time.
James, I imagine Jorginho will start next to Declan Rice in midfield.
I think so, yeah. I think so. But I'll be intrigued to see how Arteta sets it up. You know, will he maybe consider switching them, playing Rice a bit deeper so that we've got a bit more cover when Bayern come at us on the flanks? I don't know. A problem with losing like you do against Aston Villa means that, you know, suddenly you're second-guessing every selection.
Yeah, quite.
And I think Art's right. Jesus came on and made a great impact in the first leg. And ordinarily, you'd say, well, maybe that's worth starting with in the second, but then...
And he loves the Champions League as well, by the way.
Yeah, his record in the Champions League is better than the Premier League, certainly in terms of goals and output. So you're kind of left second-guessing everything. My inclination would probably be to go with Jorginho and Rice in midfield with Martin Odegaard if we can, and start with Kai Havertz up top. And I think Jesus, as he did in the first leg, could be a brilliant option off the bench or maybe even off the left wing in a similar job to what he did against Manchester City. But it's hard to call. It's really hard to call.
Meanwhile, yesterday, late afternoon, Arsenal women thumped Bristol City 5-0 in the WSL. Braces from Beth Mead and Alessia Russo. All I'll say, obviously this will be talked about more elsewhere, the Athletic Women's Football Podcast will talk about this, but to get back in the Champions League next season, that would be, if they win a trophy and get back in the Champions League, Art, that is a successful season, isn't it?
I wouldn't say successful. I would say...
The minimum?
The minimum. Yeah, it is sort of the minimum, isn't it?
Yeah, it's becoming the minimum. It's what they did last season. So it would be a repeat of that. I think going into next season, the big thing is making sure they actually qualify for the Champions League group stages. Yeah. So it's all well and good finishing third, which they are likely to do. But yeah, it's about actually properly representing in the competition. I think probably the bigger talking point from yesterday was Laura Wienreuther made her return after her ACL injury. So that's, I think, everyone who suffered an ACL last season back in some sort. Yeah, it's all about kind of looking forward to the summer and next season now, which hopefully goes better than this one.
All right, let's have a song to finish. James, what have you got?
Well, I was thinking about some of Zinchenko's defensive lapses. So I've gone for... Bad Habits by Ed Sheeran. But it sort of works on two levels because the song is kind of about a guy who's sort of, you know, falls into this trap time and time again, you know, a romantic trap essentially. And I feel a bit like Mikel Arteta's in that position with Zinchenko, where he finds him kind of irresistible, even though it's not necessarily the best choice for him. So bad habits, yeah.
Nice. Art, what about you?
I don't know if you'd class this as like a similar kind of vibe, but I'm going with Hot and Cold by Katy Perry.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Feels like that kind of encapsulates this past week with Arsenal. More hot in the first half of games, but cold in the second half. So hopefully it's just hot against Bayern Munich.
Yeah, no, Bayern Munich feeling hot. We'll have that next week if they really play well. I've gone with the team selection, really, because I mean, obviously, like I say, Captain Hindsight and all that, but I certainly thought, really, we've been so good with the way it's gone. So I've gone for If I Could Turn Back Time by Cher. Because I would go back to Jorginho in the middle and have it up front. But anyway, that title I can't, and nor can we. So it's onwards, Munich, in a few days' time. I hope you enjoy it. Thanks to James, thanks to Art, and thanks to Jay, our producer. This has been Handbreak Off, the Arsenal podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Auf Wiedersehen.